Our top story this morning, a double homicide in downtown Tampa. Two men were gunned down in the lobby of the Saint building.
Now to our other breaking story. Francis Castle is alive back in Tampa.
Those who do evil to others, the killers, the rapists, psychos, sadists, you'll come to know me well. Frank Castle is dead. Call me the Punisher.
Welcome to Percolated Media's look at the Punisher films.
Well, well, well. This day was bound to come sooner or later, wasn't it?
Part of the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast, full Marvel series.
15 minutes late, you stupid dickhead.
Join Matt.
The finest man I've ever known.
Adam.
I know you.
And Garrett.
Don't mind him. Doesn't think before he talks. Just like his mother.
As they review each film involving the Frank Castle character.
We're really sorry.
From Dolph Lundgren to Ray Stevenson and everything in between.
Go with God.
God's gonna sit this one out.
The three co-hosts break down where the character came from.
This is undignified.
As well as his overall place in the Marvel Universe.
You're sick, you know that, don't you?
And of course, just how they feel about all of Hollywood's attempts to bring the character to screen.
Well, it's definitely not in the plan, but we beat the spread.
This isn't football.
Nah, it's a figure of speech.
So prepare to be punished, podcast listeners.
Can I ask you a question? What's the reason behind you killing all those guys? There's a limit to revenge.
The Percolated Media Punisher Retrospective begins now.
Let's talk.
Punisher Warzone, released December 5th, 2008. Budget was $35 million, box office $10 million, ouch. And this was directed by Lexi Alexander. Long before Wonder Woman, this was the first superhero film to be directed by a woman. Unless you count Tank Girl. Boys, we had a lot to say about the last Punisher movie, and I wonder if we'll have just as much to say about this one, because the genesis of this movie started, as we teased, as a sequel to the 2004 movie.
And as I mentioned last week, I can't believe with how big of a flop that was, that they were going to jump into another one with Thomas Jane as the character. And, oh, go ahead, just keep going.
So, yeah, this was going to be, there was going to be a Punisher 2. With Jonathan Hensley back to direct, Thomas Jane reprising the role, and Jane himself, as we talked about, did something that I would never do if I was an actor. Talk to the fans about what they wanted to see on message boards.
Jesus Christ.
And because of that, they said, well, we want Jigsaw to be the villain because he's one of the only named Punisher villains that's not tied into other superheroes like Kingpin or Bullseye. So they said, all right, we're going to do that. Because the Punisher movie, while it did not do well in theaters, did a killing, no pun intended, on DVD. So that kind of justified a preliminary budget. And Lionsgate did say, yep, 2006, we're going to do Punisher 2. And Lionsgate CEO said, yep, we're going to do it. Avi Arad, who was a producer on last week's movie, as he's done with a lot of Marvel movies, said they were going to rewrite the script. And Jane started putting on the weight because he took the role seriously. You have to give him that. Maybe too seriously, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie was going to take production in Louisiana. And then in August of 2006, they said, we're still waiting to start production. So they were already behind the eight ball as far as their production. And Jane came out and said, who was really the most vocal person as far as like getting updates. If anything, he was more interested than Hensley seemingly was.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yep, we're going to film in February of 2007. And then Hensley said, I'm not going to be coming back. Apparently, he was getting frustrated with the constant rewrites and the production changes because they also could not shoot in Louisiana because of Katrina.
Can you go over, are you aware of one of the scriptwriters on this who requested he get his name taken off?
Are you talking about Kurt Sutter?
Yes.
Yes. So if you don't know who Kurt Sutter is, everybody, he was the writer of The Shield and the creator of Sons of Anarchy. So very extensive writing career. And The Shield, one of my favorite shows, to be perfectly honest.
Great show.
Which ties into Fantastic Four, ironically, which we'll get into later.
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt Sutter was involved in writing the script for this movie. And he said, yeah, I had a great time writing it, but Jane said, oh yeah, that script got thrown out, so we're going to try again. And eventually, Sutter requested his name be removed from the credits because he said that very little of my draft wound up in the script, except for one scene. And eventually, Thomas Jane pulled out of the movie and said, I'm putting a lot of time into putting in work that I just don't believe in. So he left, and it was at this point they said, all right, we're just going to can that pre-continuity and just start from scratch, which I think they should have done in the first place, because that movie was so bad. I don't think you can... It's not like... I'm trying to think of like bad first movies that got great sequels that rebounded, especially with superheroes. This one, I think you were starting from a bad place and you couldn't recover.
No, there was no way to recover from last week's film. There's no way you could have taken that character. And the weird thing about Thomas Jane pulling out is, like, he's saying, yeah, I want to do fans proud. I want to do this comic book movie. And then when he pulled out, he said that it was too much of a comic book aesthetic. And I'm thinking, make up your mind. Like, he wants a gritty movie all of a sudden. Did you want a comic book movie or do you want a gritty movie? Which one did you want? And yeah, when he pulled out, I was thinking, okay, well, put someone else in the role, because obviously, I mean, I think the passion's there, but Thomas Jane just was not right for this role.
So what happened was they said, we're going to reboot, and they brought in Lexi Alexander. So very interesting person, not just filmmaker.
No.
Former kickboxer.
Champion became a stunt
performer, world champion kickboxer, became an Oscar-nominated stunt performer, and then she made a movie called Green Street, or in the States, it's known as Green Street Hooligans, which glorifies soccer in the way that, like, if we as Americans made a movie about someone becoming a man by joining the Crips.
I remember watching it with my sister. It's one of my sister's favorite films. I thought it was okay. I don't know how you can watch that movie, though, and say, that's the woman I want to do the Punisher film. It's more of a comedy than anything. But, yeah, interesting choice. She was nominated for an Oscar for a short that she did. And she was up and coming. I mean, she was really, really on the tips of a lot of people's tongues. And I give Marvel and Lionsgate a lot of credit because, as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, Matt, women were not hired to do movies, let alone comic book film. So the fact that they took this woman and they made her the director of this is pretty remarkable when you think about it. And yeah, she is a very fascinating person. I'm going to get into it as we get into this because, like I mentioned last week, I did interview her. She didn't have too many nice things to say about the experience of making this movie, but she is very proud of this movie.
And unfortunately, this movie did damage to her career because it's hard enough for women to get movies. It's almost impossible after you have a bomb. I mean, look at what happened to Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, I'm still scared she's going to kick my ass. Back when I interviewed her.
She could kick all of our asses. Yeah, if it was absolutely a three-on-one fight, she would take us all down.
Absolutely.
A volunteer.
What I'll say about Lexi Alexander is, yeah, this did do some damage to it. She did not do another studio film after this, but a lot of that was self-done too, because she is so outspoken, or she was very outspoken on social media, and a lot of that got her in a lot of trouble with a lot of different groups. And when you do that with the higher ups that she had, it does damage to you. After I interviewed her, she did invite me to a film festival the week after. Unfortunately, I could not go. I really wanted to. I really wanted to meet her face to face because she is a remarkable interview. She's a very interesting person, but I feel bad that she didn't do much more studio work after this. But if you ask her, she probably doesn't care. She's happy doing what she's doing.
It's tough because I still want to see her do so much more. I think people forget she's Oscar nominated. You know, I mean, she started freaking as an Oscar nominated director. You know, that's a big deal for anybody. But some of her CW work that she did filming those TV shows were some of the best episodes of those. So, I mean, she's still got talent, you know, today. And she's worked with, you know, some names, her, you know, Green Street Hooligans that she did. You look at the cast that's in that and the people that she had to put through their paces, talented ass woman in a male dominated field that does not like strong women directors. She's a unicorn.
And she deserves credit for getting a good performance out of Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
She's the one.
Yeah. What's funny is, like, she was a stunt person in Batman and Robin. So she did have some experience in comic book films, if, you know, just by a stunt woman, but still, I mean, she was around it.
So she gets the job, but initially she turned it down, which is a trend with this movie. There were a lot of people who said no, and then this movie must have been produced by Jedi because they convinced a lot of people. Now, she said she did not know the character. When she first got the script, she passed on it. But then someone sent her the Punisher Max series, which was Marvel's, their equivalent of like TVMA productions. Like it's to the MCU what the Netflix shows were for a while, where they were allowed to be much more explicit than the main line could be. And Lionsgate also told her she could basically give the project whatever feel she wanted. And she got to decide a new actor to play the Punisher. And that was enough to convince her. And she said, unfortunately, this is where real life kind of rears its ugly head. One of the reasons why this movie is as outlandish with the violence as it is, and that'll certainly be a conversation, was the Virginia Tech Massacre happened.
Mm. Yeah.
And the shooter had the Punisher logo on display in some of the videos that he made. So she said, I can't authentically portray this character in the real world because that just... It rings too close to home. And her pitch was, this is going to be a throwback to the 80s. And they said, all right, well, we'll give you the money and we'll start the search for a new Punisher. And they landed on the late, great Ray Stevenson, who, much like Thomas Jane, put in the work. You know, he trained with Marines, including the fight choreographer. We'll talk about him in the movie itself, but he also read the Max line. So that was really the... One of the key influences on this movie was that particular run. Although I will say there is a, to an extent is what I will say. That should be in quotes.
Lexi did say when I interviewed her that Ray Stevenson was not her choice. That was the choice of Kevin Feige. And he told her, he said, watch Rome. I think you'll see something in him. And she took it home that night and watched it. And she agreed. We'll talk about it. But hey, I'll say this about him. He didn't have to dye his hair for this role.
No, and there was another person that Lexi Alexander wanted to cast, but was told no.
This is incredible.
So Jigsaw was originally offered to Patty Considine. Great character actor. Like, if you've seen Hot Fuzz, if you saw him, you would know him, but he passed on. So in the interim, Freddie Prinze Jr. auditioned, and apparently Lexi Alexander loved his audition, but Lionsgate refused to cast him.
Well, the story she gave was... Lionsgate told her to audition him as a favor because he really, really wanted the role. So she auditioned him just as a favor to this person at Lionsgate who Freddie Prinze Jr. convinced to do it. And she really enjoyed the audition, surprisingly. But when she took it to the executives, they were like, oh no, we're not going to give it to him. We just wanted to appease him. It's like, what the fuck do you want then?
Yeah, and he's a comic book fan. I don't know if he's a Punisher fan necessarily.
He's a huge Punisher fan.
He's a nerd. He's a big nerd.
Yeah.
So the movie was going to be called Punisher Welcome Back Frank, directly taking the Garth Ennis line. But then they changed it to Punisher Warzone, which that is a much more comic booky title. And speaking of timing, which is always very important when discussing the history of superhero films, 2008, we had Iron Man, we had the Hulk, and we had the Dark Knight.
And two of the writers of this are the writers of Iron Man, by the way.
Yes, Art Markham and Matt Holloway.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Hellboy 2.
I'm talking Marvel and DC.
Okay.
And even people forget Hellboy 2 even exists. Much like this movie. Because when you think of Christmas and family getting together, this will put people around the TV like it. I mean, it worked for Adam's wife, apparently. So.
This flopped harder than Howard the Duck when it was released.
Yeah, it did. It was a full-on bomb. I think the Christmas, why would you release this in December of all times?
Ridiculous.
And I do think when you have Iron Man and the Dark Knight really standing out from the pack, the marketing for this did not really do it any favors.
No, the marketing was terrible. And Alexander was out saying that a couple years later.
And also, Iron Man had Robert Downey Jr., who really sold the movie. Heath Ledger's passing really influenced The Dark Knight. It gave it that mystique that people who were not even Batman fans went to go see it. People who hadn't even seen Batman Begins went to go see it. This, not so much. You know, you're talking about a character who had two swings at the bat and missed both times. And this was strike three.
Yep.
This is why the Punisher wound up back with Marvel proper, because the rights reverted and Lionsgate was like, we can't make money off these goddamn movies. Mm-mm. So yeah, take it back, whatever. And now Bernthal's played the role for 10 plus years. He's going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. But yeah, this was the final Punisher film released by Lionsgate.
Yeah. And it wasn't even the Marvel logo. It's like Marvel Knights, right?
So let's get into that. So this was the first film, one of only two, that had the Marvel Knights production banner. which I thought was an actually ingenious way to, not that the MCU was, there were still doubts of like, oh, they're not going to make an Avengers movie. But this was kind of like their way of saying, we're going to take darker and lesser known titles and put them under this logo. Because there's no way you could have this in the same continuity as like Thor. Now you could probably do it, but this is, I mean, we'll get into it. This would not fit in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in any capacity. Not just because the Punisher played a character in the MCU.
I think these kind of decisions are smart. I think they're needed, and I think they should be used today. You know, I think they both on comics and in other type of media. You know, DC Comics has DC Black Label. Marvel keeps bringing back Marvel Knights, Marvel Max, and all this other stuff. Marvel M, which I saw in a comic, which made me roll my eyes. So make it clear that this is an R-rated, put it out there and do it. I think they have a hard time trying to do that because down deep, look at Deadpool, they kind of want those teenagers to come in and spend their money too.
Yep.
Yeah, especially with, you know, it took until Deadpool and Logan to get movies that R-rated superhero movies that made money hand over fist. But I think a lot of that's because they were also doing something very different. This just looked like another Punisher film. And I saw it on a whim. I honestly didn't care, but I'm so glad I went into that theater because, oh my God, my jaw was on the floor for so much of this movie that I half expected the cleanup crew to pick it up and put it back in my hands when the movie was done. This was like John Wick before John Wick, where I saw it twice in the same day.
Wow.
And I would tell everybody, like, hey, even if you don't know who the Punisher is, go see this movie. That worked for some people. Some people said, don't recommend anything to me ever again because you have no clue what you're talking about. But for all the critics who tore this movie a new one, much like the other two, there were a lot of people praising this movie, including Patton Oswalt, who hosted a screening with Lexi Alexander in attendance.
Yes. Which is a fantastic podcast. It's called How Did It Get Made? Just wonderfully done. There have been other champions. Kevin Smith is a huge champion of this. Scott Derrickson is a huge champion and backer of this. Over the years, it's gathered some steam as being reevaluated, as a lot of these movies do when they come out and flop initially. Is it warranted? We'll talk about that. But even in its initial run, Roger Ebert gave perhaps the most backhanded compliment I've ever heard in that he said it was the best-looking bad movie he's ever seen. You don't get much more backhanded than that.
So I take it neither, you know, I know Adam's answer. Garrett, you did not see this in the theater.
I did not go to theaters to see this. I don't know if it was because Dark Knight and Iron Man had taken so much of my time. I know I was in the midst of going to college around this time, too, so that might have had something to do with it. No, I saw it, I believe, when, you know what? You know when I finally watched it? Is the week before I interviewed her. That was the first time I watched it. I hadn't seen it up until then. And this was my first time revisiting it since.
Well, it's not mine, because I...
Yeah, I know.
I revisit this movie regularly. Yes. And Adam, this is a first-time viewing for him, so...
Hmm?
Adam, did you just not give a shit when this came out? And that's why... like, I'm being serious. Like, did you just not care enough to give this the time of day?
I just didn't care. Like, the marketing that showed up, I mean, there was a lot going on that summer. And I remember I saw most of the movies that year at the drive-in because I had babies that were coming along. But I remember seeing it, and I saw Ray Stevenson. I'm like, that's what he looks like. That's what this movie looks like. I don't give a shit. And that was it. Like, I saw a promo, and that promo is what made me not go see this movie. And I've just never cared ever since.
Wow, good job, marketing.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if they didn't release this when they did, maybe it would have done better. But also, I hate, this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, much like Roger Ebert. I don't think the world was ready for this movie. Let's get into the movie then. So we open with the Marvel Knights logo, which is actually different from the standard Marvel one. I really wish they kept this. But when your other movie is Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, I can see why you don't want to have anything to do with associating.
Yeah.
Does that use the logo too?
Yeah. It's the only other time.
Yeah. And that movie's PG-13. So we've had two cracks at the Punisher. We had one where he's already established and one which is an origin story. This one, in a lot of ways, borrows more from the 89 movie than it does with the Thomas Jane film, because he's been the Punisher for 5 years, which is the exact timeline as the Dolph Lundgren film. And with the first action sequence of this movie is almost identical to how the Dolph Lundgren film opens.
Yep.
I love how this movie opens with the credits, because it gives you all the information you need to know. You see the flashes of the mob hit gone wrong. So I'm like, oh, finally we're doing the origin story right. And I like that he's been the Punisher. I like that he's living in the sewer, but it doesn't look as ridiculous as it did in the Dolph Lundgren film, where clearly he's been at this for a while. It's still very tactical. Like, he's only got just enough of an appliance to live down here, but he's also been going after the mob routinely. So, like, this has been, unlike the Thomas Jane film and the Lundgren film, his like, war on crime, the never-ending thing, actually makes sense.
Yeah, I like this opening with the credits because I wasn't really paying attention. You know, it just starts. I'm like, I like that I saw the Marvel Knights logo. Smart. Smart. Bring that back. Jesus, criminy. I don't care if you got to pay Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada for coming up with it. Fucking use the logo. But I wasn't necessarily paying attention, and I grabbed my pad and my pen. I'm like, oh, snap. They're finally just dropping us into the movie. And like we've mentioned for two before, using the opening credits to just explain Frank and drop us in the film. Really good idea. And I like that he's watching the news reports because he's following this along. Like, just really good setup.
Because much like the 89 film, we have a mobster who's beaten the rap and is getting off scot-free and is hosting a party for, you know, him getting off scot-free. We're introduced to Billy the Butte, who we'll come to know as Jigsaw. As we mentioned, Dominic West was not the first choice, and he passed on it the first time. But he was convinced. And look, this is a very sort of prim and proper type of actor, but he had great success on The Wire. And here, he gets to go full ham in a way that very few actors have been able to do since Jim Carrey in Batman Forever. His New York accent in this makes Jack Nicholson in The Departed sound subtle. And I love him for it because he fully commits to this. Unlike Tommy Lee Jones, where you feel like he's trying too hard and it's out of place, I feel like he knows what this movie is.
Wow, this is where we're starting, huh? If you go to Lexi, she will tell you that everything that he does that hams it up is due to her. She's the one who said, go bigger, bigger, bigger with each and every take. Dominic West was like, this is really what you want me to do? I don't like Dominic West in this movie. I think he took what he established on The Wire. I saw good things for him. But this movie, I really don't like him in this lead role. I think he just does it too big.
Can't stand the way he acts here at the beginning of this film. You know what? I'm going to put it this way. I don't like Dominic West in this film. I like Jigsaw in this film, and I can't believe that. This opening with this mob, has there been a more stereotypical, like the Sopranos would look at this and say, oh my God, you're being stereotypical to this Italian mob.
Dude, there's a fucking Marlon Brando fucking impersonator in this fucking scene.
Oh yeah, the guy is like, go look to the back, here's
oh
a
my
queen.
God.
This is
I
so ridiculous.
Back, for Christ's sake.
This is so over the top, but where I think it works though, is it sets a tone early. You're either going to go with it or not right away because it tells you what movie it is with this scene.
Oh, this movie is, if the first, the Thomas Jane film we talked about, that movie had no clue what they were making. This is the Adam West Batman mixed with Itchy and Scratchy.
It's Batman 66 of the Punisher universe.
And I appreciate that because I think what works about this movie the most is that the Punisher can exist in an exaggerated world, but he himself has to be the thing that tethers the movie. And despite this, you know, spaghetti bender, Italian mobster, you got Dominic West, who's the beautiful, pretty boy who can't stand walking into a room without looking into a mirror, which is why I think Freddie Prinze Jr. would have been perfect for this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's not, he's sort of, and look, we'll get into this movie. This movie plagiarizes Tim Burton's Batman.
Oh my God.
To the point where that bastard should have sued. But this is very much the Jack Napier type of dynamic where he works for the mobster. He's, you know, very vain about how he looks because Jack has that line, you look great, I didn't ask. And he gets on that woman for like, I don't tell you how to put on your makeup. Oh, sorry, I have to do my horrendous New York accent that would make even the most jaded of Jet fans feel ashamed. With, oh my God, like, see, the fucking medical degrees must have bought their degrees off the internet. I'm like, he sounds like an alien who just got to Earth and landed in the middle of Times Square.
I hate it.
But it cracks me up. And he gets some great lines later on. That's just crazy. But he's like, all right, I'm going to, he runs like a recycling plant, which might as well be Axis Chemicals for all things considered. And he's got his crew, but they're there just to put up formalities. We're also introduced to two detectives who are staking out the party. Martin Soap, who is a character from the Garth Ennis run, played by Dash Mihawk, who has a more comic bookish name than the character he's playing.
Lexi put him in every one of her films. He's a mainstay in her movies. And if there's a character I really like in this movie, it's Soap. I find him fucking hysterical every time he's on. Just because this is the way the character is. Is he's goofy, he's bumbling. I think this actor does that well.
Well, I also like that you realize, oh, his bumpish, like, odd, golly gee whiz type of detective, it's an act.
Yeah.
Because it's revealed that he's actually been working with the Punisher, which I like. That's from the comics. And speaking of the Punisher himself, he takes out the guards, and in front of this banquet, the lights get cut, and you see this flare, and Punisher is just standing there in all of his glory. And I gotta say, third time's the charm, because Ray Stevenson, to me, is the Punisher in the same way that J.K. Simmons will be J. Jonah Jameson. I think he is fantastic for the Punisher.
I think he's good in the first half. I really enjoy him in this opening scene. I think later on, the movie itself just gets bogged down by a whole bunch of shit that is kind of out of his control. But I think overall, you're right. But the main thing I noticed while watching this movie is we've seen these Punishers just turn down having flak jackets on. They turn down having any protection. He's wearing the fucking symbol on his flak jacket. And I just almost stood up and said, bravo, finally, there's a fucking Punisher with some sense. Yeah, I'm with you for the most part on Ray Stevenson.
I think he really embodies the Punisher here, like from the get-go. Like, he's a force of nature. He is... I mean, he's John Wick, you know, in that type of vein where he's just, he's a machine, man. He's a tank. I mentioned that when I saw the looks, the stills, the trailer, that I couldn't stand the way he looks. And I still don't like the high collar. Look, in comics, I hate the new 52 high collar on Superman and Batman. I don't like it here. I know it's from a bomb suit, but it's also not explained that it's from a bomb suit. Like, that's what that is. Go watch Zero Dark 30, or not Zero Dark 30, but fucking
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker, thank you. But I think it just, I don't know, it's distracting to me. But holy hell, his entrance, then this utter evisceration of this table is like, I'm like, okay, cool, pretty good. And then he grabs grandma's neck and snaps it. And I'm just like, oh, okay, you just told me exactly what I'm in for.
So, I remember there was a critic who came out and said, Lexi Alexander has fantasies that should put her in prison. And when I asked her about that, when I interviewed her, she said, yeah, I took that as a compliment. And this fucking grandma having her neck snapped reminded me of that.
So before we get to this this bloodbath at this dinner, I think what I like about how the Punisher is depicted in this movie is he's portrayed the way like Jason Voorhees is portrayed to camp counselors. Like, he is a slasher villain to these criminals. You know, Absolutely. He's treated as myth. People don't even think he exists. I mean, it's very Batman-esque, but I like that he's imposing, which I never got from Thomas Jane. And you only get it from Dolph Lundgren because of how big he is. Like, and I also like that Ray Stevenson, age-wise and facially, looks like a guy who's been through some shit. He's not a pretty boy like Thomas Jane. He can actually speak coherent English like Dolph Lundgren. But I also like he doesn't talk for like the first 20 minutes.
Yep.
And he's imposing. And as you mentioned, first thing he does, cuts that guy's head off clean as a whistle. So look, I knew that this movie was going to be violent, but Adam, did you have any idea you were going to be watching a splatterhouse horror movie?
God, no. Like, I had no idea that this thing has got as much blood as freaking like Hellraiser 6. Like, this thing just goes for the jugular, no pun intended, and keeps going. You know it's going to be violent because it's a Punisher film. I had no clue that she was going to revel in just the blood part of it. It's not just gun porn, which you get in these kind of films. Uh-uh. She is going to leave blood all over this film.
Well, don't forget, this is also for Lionsgate. And Lionsgate was known for this kind of shit. So, yeah.
Well, you literally had people who confused this with Saw. Absolutely. Because of Jigsaw.
Because of Jigsaw. Yeah.
And I think she was right to make the violence this over the top. You're not supposed to be taking it seriously. Like, no. This is the most comic booky of the three by far, and I appreciate that they embrace that. I don't feel like she's ashamed of the material the way like Hensley came off as.
No, but she's unfamiliar with it. And you set this up by saying that when she saw that poster in that school shooter's room, she wanted to do this just to make it as unrealistic as she could. And you're absolutely right. In the last two podcasts, we bitch about, well, the tone's off. Here, she sets a tone and it does not waver from this. And I respect that as well. I respect the way she has this. Now, I do think she loses control of this production by the end of it. I think there are parts of this movie that were added without her consent and she had to go with it. And I'll get to those when I get to them. But at this point, yeah, I like the tone that she's setting.
And it's also upfront by saying, this is the movie we're going to be. You're either with us or you're not. It's very upfront. And look, there are people who just are not going to like this movie because they don't like the tone. But I also am of the belief you cannot make a serious Punisher film. I just think the character's too problematic, and they've had two attempts and just failed. Because I think Lexi Alexander, for all of her, like, I don't want to say ignorance with the character, but she realized that the Punisher is a sociopath. And he is clearly mentally unwell, which is why he goes to the extremes of murder that he does in this movie. Because even in this opening, you get that beautiful shot of him hanging on the chandelier with the shells falling that might as well be out of a John Woo movie. And it's countered by him kicking a chair leg into a guy's eye socket. This literally is, say what you want, we finally see the Punisher punishing people. Like, he stacks up a massive body count, not just in this movie, but it pays off a bit later on, because the first film, the Lundgren film, he's the Punisher for 5 years. He's killed like 100 people. He kills 100 people in this one movie. Mm-hmm. I think the body count's like 80-something. So he's taken no prisoners. Billy and his partner, who we'll find out is an undercover cop, they go to his recycling factory, where we're introduced to some... this sounds like a bad Mad Libs with Irish meth-using... parkour artists.
What the fuck is this? I get that, you know, parkour was huge around this time. Bond did it. We talked about it when we did Casino Royale. Incredible Hulk did it earlier in the year. I get what they're going for, but this seemed out of place, especially the way it's paid off. This whole meth head, it seemed out of place in this movie.
Well, I like that everybody is exaggerated in this movie except for the Punisher himself. Because I also appreciate that, like, when you have a villain who's going to look this ridiculous... And that's down to the comic, based on how he's drawn. I think everyone should fit that exaggerated type of tone, right down to the henchmen. So I appreciate that they're being consistent with all of the villains, not just the main one. You can argue it's excessive, and I can't argue against that. But I also appreciate they're making this as outlandish as they possibly can.
Yeah, I'll say I don't understand it. I don't like it. I will get to the payoff when we get to that part, but I feel like I'm back in Predator 2 territory with Jamaican blood gangs for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand.
We got Irish drug dealers working with New York mobsters. look, if this movie took place in the same universe as The Warriors, I would believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we're going to find out, every ethnicity has a gang in this movie. So Frank gets intel from the cop who cold cocks himself to make it look like the Punisher attacked him, and... Again, you learned that the Punisher's been through some shit. He fixes his nose with that pencil. And again, he doesn't even say anything for the first, like, 20 minutes. He's just taking guys out. But I also appreciate we finally have a Punisher who feels like a tactician.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And we find out that, you know, Billy is working with this other gang to smuggle in some organic material, which is basically drugs, as we'll find out. But the Punisher comes in, and when his accomplice goes to take a shit, where I don't understand why the bathroom is up on the rafters. That makes no sense.
No.
And it's like an outhouse by the time he comes.
It makes no sense.
On some of these, I feel like the shot quality changes kind of with the camera angle. And I think there's some pretty big inconsistencies with some of the way it looks. And this is one of those random inserts where I'm like, I think something got cut that doesn't explain what it is. Well, or it's not. And it's just like, this is where he shows up because it's what we need.
Well, speaking of the look, let's talk a little bit about the cinematography. Because this movie feels like it was ripped off the pages, right down to the color palette. There's a lot of neon. I like how it's clearly like not our real world. It sort of reminds me of the Schumacher Batman films, where it's a lot of lights and brightness, but it's not as like day glow-esque.
No, but that was a complete accident
because of the copies of the comics she got.
Yeah, she got copies that were really bright, and she said, I want to make it look like this, whereas it ended up being completely different in the real copies. I think the movie's beautiful. I love the fact that she kept three primary colors in each and every shot, and it shows. I think a lot of movies after this took after this. You know, a lot of comic book movies took this aesthetic and ran with it, and she is to be commended for that. She set a tone, like I said, with the outlandishness in the beginning scene, and it even goes to the look. With what budget she has, she didn't have much to work with, but she put it all on the screen, and I commend her for that.
I think this one's a lot more economical with that money than the 2004 film by far.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were made for the same amount of money. But I also appreciate that in a world nowadays where I'm so tired of that Marvel look, where every movie has the same, like, visual style, mm-hmm. because it's the house formula. except for like Guardians of the Galaxy or Thor Ragnarok, where they get to be more colorful. I'm glad that this came out at a time where we weren't afraid to make everything look kind of outlandish and different. This really had to make itself stand out from the other two movies. And one of the things I complained about was the Punisher never feels like he does anything in the wrong. In this movie, he shoots an undercover cop, which is, you know, that's the kind of dilemma I like with the Punisher. What happens when he does something objectively wrong and he has to, like, struggle with that? Like, I think this is a great setup for, like, his story in the movie. Because he realizes he's wearing a wire and he throws Billy into a glass compactor. Turns it on, which, my God, this is, like, if you thought Joker getting dropped into a vat of chemicals would fuck up a child, this is, like, I can't believe he survived this, first of all.
There's no way. And in the book, in the comic book, he gets thrown through a window or something, doesn't he? And that's...
It depends. Like, they've done a lot of things with Jigsaw as far as, like, why he looks the way he does.
I hate but, this. Yeah, this is so ridiculous. I get it. You know, it's comic book. It's outlandish. But this is just ridiculous where he gets thrown in and just his face gets mangled.
Well, they do say the doctor does tell him there wasn't a single ounce of skin left, like, intact. Because you can see on his hands that he's all scarred up. So, I mean, this is better than that. Adam, you can attest to this. Remember when they did Jigsaw on the Bernthal show and they just gave Ben Barnes, like, a couple scratches on his face?
That I was about to go to that. I'm like, at least this goes full Jigsaw. You know, this gives him that comic book look, and it does it better, but we're fucking at Axis Chemicals. Like, yeah. I cannot believe that I don't have, you know, Commissioner Gordon going, Batman, wait! this is unabashedly ripping it off. Even more so later on.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait till he gets finished.
Oh, yeah, yeah, save it for that. That's the scene Tim Burton should have filed a lawsuit over. But it's also very 89 with the whole, like, oh, the hero made the villain. And he drops him into a pit. But unlike Batman, where you could argue it was ambiguous, he turns the machine on. He's like, fuck you. And the FBI does break in, but much like in 89, Castle manages to escape. But he goes back to his hideout, and he's clearly pissed that he shot an undercover cop. And this brings in Nikki's former partner, Colin Salmon, who Adam seems to love for whatever reason, but he keeps ending up in these, you know, Alien versus Predator, yes, and Resident Evil, like... This guy must pick his scripts by dartboard.
This is what happens, and you know what? Come at me for it, but it's true. When you can't get Lance Reddick, you call Colin Salmon, because they share so much of the same genre in movies in one another. I had no idea he was in this. Ugh, he's an also ran.
So he's Nikki's former partner, and he says, you know, I'm here to bring Castle in. So they assign him to the Punisher Task Force, which is just Martin Soap. And he, and again, this is exposition. He gives him the information and the audience that Frank was with his family, wife and two kids. They witnessed a mob execution. They were caught in the crossfire. They mentioned he was former special ops. And he goes, all right, where are the Punisher murder files? He goes, all of them. It's literally every cabinet in that place. I'm like, okay, this makes sense if the Punisher's been working for 5 years.
This, the fact that they used this economically to explain to us, again, what they did at the beginning, but it makes it very clear to us. I like the scene before this at the gravesite for the agent that got killed, that Frank is losing his shit. This is a Punisher that we get more emotion out of this one than we did in the last two films, and we're only 10 minutes into this thing, 20 minutes in. So I love that gravesite scene with Frank, and this right here, it's having fun but still completely giving us what we need to do to keep it going. This is a good backstory dump. This is how you do it.
Well, again, the Punisher himself is portrayed seriously.
Yeah, he's the straight man.
Yeah, he is literally the straight man in a world that is as lambastic. I mean, Louis Benjamin might as well be in Arkham Asylum, as we'll find out in a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he goes to the grave, witnesses the cop left a wife and daughter behind, which are obviously going to be targets for Billy, who we see all bandaged up. His doctor comes in, and I thought the doctor looked like M. Night Shyamalan for a second. And so we cut to him. He tells him, it's a miracle you survived. He talks about, like, how he wound up at a free clinic. He's just like, I missed an insurance payment.
It's a little too current for today.
Yeah. So he takes off the bandage, and he mentions they use, like, horse skin to put him back together. I love how the henchman just pukes when he looks at the sight of him, which you would realistically do because he looks, oh, I mean, the makeup, it's exaggerated, but it's right off the page.
Yeah.
The only thing he was missing was a mirror to smash in this scene. These writers should be fucking ashamed of themselves for this shit.
Well, it's not just the writers, it's Lexi Alexander.
Well, yeah, I know. But this at this point, Batman 89 is already as antiquated as a fucking powdered wig. So
especially the year of the Dark Knight King. Yeah, yeah. The year of the Dark Knight.
Yeah, so why are you going to go back to the 89? I don't like this. And from this point, I'm with this movie in the beginning. I love the opening. I shouldn't say love. I really like the opening scene of this. I like how the Punisher, as you guys have mentioned, it's the best Punisher we've had so far. But from this point on, this movie kind of takes a nosedive.
I'm with it full force.
Even the way that it's shot, that he's in the same kind of like dentist chair that we see in Batman 89. Even the angles that they use are just like, that's where I'm like, man, yes. You just, ugh.
Jesus.
Well, I also love how they make fun of the trope of the villain giving himself a nickname, because he sees the puzzle pieces on Times Square. That's where he gets the Jigsaw name, not because he actually comes up with it on his own. And I love how he just stabs we don't see him stab the doctor. It's the one time the movie shows restraint with someone not getting killed.
Yeah, I do like they walk back in and he's just, because I think he's going to be chopped to pieces or something of that way. And yeah, I like that he's just got the scissors in his dome.
So they get in the car, and he goes, we got two things. Number one, we're going to get my money back. Number two, we're going to kill Castle. And they mentioned they got to get his brother out, who is kind of a sore subject, because even when the mobster brings him up, he's like calling him crazy, and he calls him, you know, he's not Looney Bin Jim, his name is James. So they go to Arkham Asylum, which might as well be what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this actor I know from The X-Files.
Yes, Toombs in The X-Files, and I know he was also in Lost, and he was also a big fixture on reality TV for a bit, because he was the one who dated that young chick and
16-year-old.
Yeah, which is disgusting. The guy is disgusting, but I loved him on X-Files. Here, Matt, it even reminds me of Toombs, too, because at one point he's eating someone's liver, which is exactly what that character did.
Well, kidneys.
Kidneys, yeah. Yeah, as opposed to Toombs, who ate the liver. But at this point, again, this movie is just overpopulated with characters, and if you're going to try to do this comic book film, what made The Dark Knight work so well was that it was so confined to a certain character. Here you're bringing so many characters in. We even have Microchip, who we haven't even mentioned yet. It's overpopulated, and at this point, Lexi Alexander has too many balls to juggle, and she's starting to drop them.
So I don't agree with that, because I think everything is kind of populated in quadrants. You have the Punisher and Micro, you have the cops, you have Jigsaw and Looney Bin Jim, and then you have the wife and the daughter, and they all kind of converge. So I actually think the
wife and daughter. Oh,
so I think it's handled fine. Like, I don't think it's juggling too many balls. I think it's more of just these guys might as well be Batman villains with how exaggerated they are. And the Punisher has always fought, like, you know, low key kind of mobsters. Some of them have gimmicks like Barracuda or Bullseye, but these two guys are at an 11 for the entire movie.
Which makes them stand out like a pimple on a cheerleader's forehead. It goes too far, too high, too fast, and it doesn't recover.
The only thing I don't care about, and I like that we actually have, I feel like, a few less henchmen than we did in last week's film. Like, I feel like it's actually tighter that way. I feel like they use LBJ, Looney Bin Jim, so that Jigsaw, for the most part, could be a little more restrained than Looney Bin Jim. But they set up this thing where he's completely, like, comatose. And he's being fed these pills, but then he snaps out of it really quick when his brother shows up. And then they make a thing about, hey, should we bring these pills? No, he doesn't. He just feels like he's always crazy. And it's almost like they're trying to play that he's crazy till he's not. But it's, I don't know. It's a wackadoo scene to bring another colorful character in.
Well, it's basically like he's always in a state of adrenaline, which is why they have the pills to like keep him comatose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with the henchman. You probably should have taken those with you in case something goes wrong. But we then cut to the Punisher, you know, meeting Micro, played by Newman himself in another great bit of casting. Like, this is, you know, if I was casting Micro off the page, this is one of the guys I would have picked.
Great.
And much like Stevenson. Yeah.
The bad guy from Jurassic Park? No.
Okay. God damn it. You took my note. I can't believe that for a computer guy, you get Wayne Knight.
Yeah. This is terrible. Jurassic Park.
To me, that's fun. But I'll say he's different in this role. And I think this is actually a good thing for him to do. He's not playing Newman. He's not playing Nedry. He's just, I don't know. He's different in this. And I appreciated that because I didn't expect it.
Well, I like that he's his conscience in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But he's still, you're like, oh, but this guy's still getting him guns illegally, and kind of like the devil on his shoulder being like, oh, you're killing the bad guys, where it's like, oh, you're just doing this because you can't physically do it yourself.
I like that we don't get 5 minutes to explain their relationship. They're together, they're a team, that's all I need to know.
Yeah, they've been doing it for years. And he talks about he was on jihadiblogger.com.
Oh my gosh. The way that the un-PC way that they were like, I know Lexi is very outspoken for some of the Middle East turmoils and has been for decades. Boy, do they let shit go in this film.
Yeah, well, she does some bashing in this too.
Well, he says it's gun show season in Virginia, which is where the massacre happened.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling him, like, you know, call this a retirement package. And he goes to try to give money to the wife and daughter, but they're not having any of it. And, you know, we get the line, who punishes you? Which is the question everyone should be asking. Like, who's the guy who goes after the Punisher? Most instances, it's Daredevil or Spider-Man.
I like this because I enjoy seeing Frank have to struggle with what he did. And this is the family that gets left behind, kind of like he's left behind with his. Though he gives this girl a flashlight and gives her a line about, you know, seeing in the darkness. And I can't wait to see this flashlight come back because it's clearly going to. But the money, the wife, I like the way this is done because I think it shows it's the other side of Frank. It's what would happen if it was the other way around.
But also he doesn't know how to communicate with them. Like he's lost his ability to empathize with people.
Yeah. Is this the Punisher though? I think this is when it veers off. And Julie Benz, I don't know if she had a fucking contract with Lionsgate, but she is in this. She's in Saw 5. She's in Rambo this same year. All in the same year, by the way. I'll always know her, and Matt will attune to this.
Darla.
Darla, yes. Very first vampire you ever see in Buffy the Vampire Slayer who sticks around through half the run of Angel. I don't like her in this. Every time she's on screen, I just want to scream. This character and her girl, I'm not going to put it all on her. I think giving this woman a role where she has to say, oh, you had to kill my husband and I forgive you, or something like that. I just don't like her in this role, and I don't like this role in general. I just find this to be a very, very trite, very stupid part of this movie. And I think her and the daughter should have been cut out.
No, well, you need them because...
No, you don't, actually, because this isn't the Punisher.
Yes, it is. Like, him trying to right a wrong that he did, that is in line with the Punisher, especially when he doesn't know how to communicate with people because he's, like mentally unwell. Like, he can't talk to the wife. He openly begs to, like, be shot.
Oh, my
God. Says, like, aim it right here.
Oh.
To me, this is more in line with the character. And also, like, I'm not the guy to say, I'm not even a huge Punisher fan, but I think this is actually a pretty strong depiction, all things considered.
See, this is where the movie gets overcrowded, and there's just too many roles here. And again, I would all just
connected, so I don't think you could say it's overplotted, considering everything is interconnected. It's a very straightforward plot. Like, it's not like there's a lot of twists in this, or, you know, I don't feel like they're overcomplicating it like you do.
It's a stupid plot.
It's a comic book. Like, this movie is stupid. Like, you could not have a movie this stylized and have a plot that is, you know, as interwoven as The Dark Knight. It would contrast.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying you take it serious. I'm just saying that they are trying to in a movie that doesn't need it.
Because you need some kind of through line. You couldn't just make the Punisher killing people for 90 minutes.
They've done it for the last two, and obviously this didn't work because nobody went to it.
They did it for 2 hours. They did it for 2 hours last time.
Yeah, and it didn't work for this because nobody went to it. So it didn't work, obviously.
Well, I think it also didn't work because of reasons that are outside of their control.
Yeah. Success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. Nobody's going to take full responsibility of the way this movie flopped. And I want to say this had a lot to do with it. I don't like this plotting at all.
So Jigsaw meets with the drug dealer and tells him, like, you know, I want to up my cut. We're going to run this around. Just stabs the guy with the wine glass. First time I've seen that in a long time. Not since the last wedding I went to, which is a story for another day. She didn't. No one died, but there was someone cut themselves with a wine glass. I don't know how it happened.
Oh, my God.
Their mouth looked like the Joker.
Oh, my God.
So Frank can't bring himself. He tells himself, you know, I'm going to retire, which Micro tells him not to do it. And he goes to his mother's house. And I like this of trying to... Micro's bringing in a reformed criminal, and I thought this was going to set up a reveal that he was like Jigsaw's like henchman, but no, he's not a turncoat whatsoever. But it's that whole thing of Punisher being like, I can't remember the line he says, like, once a beatnik, always a beatnik or something.
Once a banger, always a banger.
Not once a banger. And they set up Micro's mother, which I can't believe they go to the place they do with that.
Oh my God. Jesus. Yeah.
But I love he leaves, he's like, he'll be back in 3, 2, 1. Like, he knows him that well. He's like, I know you're not going to quit because you're fucking crazy. And you have a bloodlust and you just won't admit it. which some writers have done with the Punisher, where it's like he enjoys killing so much that he justifies it by saying, oh, there will always be criminals. So Jigsaw and company realize that the money's gone and the wife of the cop has it, but Frank needs to figure out how to get there. And how does he do it? By interrogating the meth heads. But they misdirect you with that. This movie feels like it's 2004 with that new alternate New Rock, and you see this missile just come out of nowhere. And this is the moment where I'm like, we have to rewind this. If this was a theater, I would have gone to the projection booth guy and said, please rewind that, because this is one of my favorite kills in any movie ever.
Wow.
So this comes up, and I did get to rewind it because I'm at home. And I'm like, did I just see what I just want? It's a body-seeking missile, so kudos. But I rewind it, and I rewind it again. And the third time I rewind it, my wife was walking down the steps. And goes, hey, what the fuck just happened? And she proceeds to sit next to me and watch the apps, because I'm laughing like I can't stop. I absolutely can't stop. And oh my god, I think we rewound it two or three more times together just to see this thing. And this is like, this makes it, you're either in for a penny, in for a pound, or you're done. I can't believe this scene.
This, to me, is Lexi Alexander responding to Lionsgate's mandate to put a parkour scene in it.
Absolutely is.
Yeah,
And she admits it, and I love it.
Yeah, and I respect that.
And I'll never forget, I had a friend who I used to work with. He went to a press screening of this. And when that scene happened, someone said, oh, for fuck's sake, at a press screening. And someone turned around and was like, clearly you don't understand this movie. Like, what in the previous 40 minutes led you believe that something like this would not happen?
I mean, does it look good? No, it looks horrible. But the dude's mid-flip and gets blown to pieces.
And you hear the limbs drop.
It should be said, too, that this was filmed in Canada, but they're trying to dress it with CGI that makes it look like New York. They're like, there's nothing real about this. But yeah, you still respond to it because of how ridiculous it is.
And he shoots the other guy in the knees, and you think he's going to let him go, but no, this is the Punisher. Drops him off the building, and he lands on spikes right in front of Soap and Budiansky. Because again, the Punisher, yeah, just because you give him what he needs to know, that doesn't mean he's going to let you off scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
And Budiansky tries to arrest him, but Castle and him fight, and he does the cliche thing of handcuffing him to himself, and they put him in the back of the cop car. We cut to Jigsaw showing up at the house, and one of my favorite lines, when she talks, like, I don't know where the money is, I swear to God. And he looks at the daughter and goes, how about you? You also going to ask your imaginary friend? And if you also notice, on Dominic West's, like, fake eye, there's a stitch in it. So even his eyeball has a freaking stitch into it.
I noticed that later, like, in the second half of the film.
That's a lot of detail. Awesome. And that makeup job looks like it took a while.
And there's times where I think, I'm like, man, this is a cool way that they're doing it with this character. And sometimes I'm looking and hit the way he's betrayal, and I just wish he could pick a voice. And he can't keep an accent to save his life.
No. Nope. Especially when you do one that's exaggerated. You have to keep it at that level. But they call the cops, they send a cop car, and of course you see katanas hanging on the wall. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen now. And he pushes her into the freaking sword. Because this is a world where people just leave weapons hanging around in their homes. And by this point, I'm laughing. But if you thought the missile kill was the most unrealistic thing in the movie. So Castle, this is where we find out Soap has been helping him out, lets him go. Frank goes into the house, and the henchman that looks like Katie Lang, which was very distracting, punches through his head, through the flesh and bone. My God, I love this movie so much because they don't care.
Where I'm happy is that I'm watching this at home, because this is another thing where I'm like, oop, and let me rewind that. Did he just? Yes, he did.
At least a missile kill. Okay, that's based in logic. This, he punches through the flesh and bone of a man's head and comes out the other side. But I also...
It's so horrible that I can't not laugh.
And it gets even better. So like they arrest the other guy by the book because Jigsaw and Jim get they leave. And he goes, turn around, put your hands behind your back. Punisher doesn't care. He just fucking blows his head off.
So he shoots this dude in the face, and it like cuts it off perfectly vertical. Like it's just chopped in half after getting shot in the head.
Oh. Well, the best part is the other guy's reaction, where he's like, God damn it. I can feel Garrett just writhing in his seat, hating this movie.
It's not that I'm hating. I'm not hating the movie. I'm just disappointed in the fact that I thought I was coming in and I was going to watch a movie where I was going to be recovered from the previous 2 weeks. But the truth is, after the first 30 minutes or so, it just kind of leaves me cold. There is a point where I do kind of perk up again, and we'll get to it. But at this point, it's not that I'm squirming. I'm just like, why is this movie existing if it doesn't know what the hell it wants to be other than just a splatter fest? And if you like splatter, that's good. But at this point, I want more substance.
Well, at this point, I'm with it because it's stylized. Like, it's not like the Friday the 13th movies where the directing is not especially like showy. Because this really is a slasher movie for all intents and purposes.
No, it's like Saw from Lionsgate. That's what I'm feeling like here.
Yeah, but I also think a lot of those Saw movies are just poorly directed, which we'll talk about. So Jigsaw is being interrogated by the cops, and he tells them they're selling a weapon. So he sells out the guys. In exchange, they get diplomatic immunity and $12 million. And much like the 2004 film, they just hand him a file on micro.
This was saying something about the U.S. selling out people, and all you had to say was chemical weapon New York.
That's true, too. Although I don't think the movie is really that preoccupied with making a statement.
No. But it's ridiculous that the cops are just like, and here's this, and here's this.
Like, there's no trial. They don't even hold them for a day. It's just, all right, you guys are free to go, even though you're both clearly insane. And they never explain why Jigsaw from here on out is wearing a faux general outfit. So they take Micro hostage, and they take the family hostage because the guy that Micro and Frank left to guard them is killed by being asked a question. And I love puns as much as anybody, so I endorse this. He tells him, like, you know, don't let me die like this. You know, I'll see you in hell. And he goes, if I see you anywhere near hell, I'm kicking your ass.
I like that we're getting, you know, look, the Punisher is an unstoppable, like, just force. But we're getting these cracks of people who, you know, mean something to him, but in a really fucked up way. And this is one of those scenes where, yeah, he's going to kill you. I like the look on Ray Stevens's face. I think he plays some of this emotion pretty damn well.
Now, where I do lose it, and I have to put a criticism at some point, this is where they literally throw in the Catholicism hard by him sitting in a church.
Mm-hmm. This is, again, can people please show there's a difference? Like, Frank Castle is not Matt Murdock. They read a crossover comic and got confused.
He's telling him, sometimes I like to get my hands on God. I do love the line, they're called the Ten Commandments, not the Ten Suggestions.
Yes.
He's telling him, like, look, I'll help you, but it's going to be by the book, because Jigsaw is assembling an army, and he's going around the set of the warriors, and he's getting the Yakuza, he's getting the Russian Mafia. You know, he might as well get the baseball guys from the Warriors. And I love that he's talking with this American flag in the background for no reason. He's saying, like, the Punisher ain't the only one who could take the lore into his own hands. This is as ridiculous as anything you'll see. And I can't help but admire it because it's audacious, it's bold, it's stupid, and I endorse it.
It's audacious, bold, and stupid. But you're endorsing
the poster.
I agree with the third part.
So we're setting up that the movie is going to take place, much like the other two films. It's going to be a big siege to the top. But not before we see that Micro's mother had her head blown off. Which, I can't believe some of the stuff they put in this movie.
Yeah,
I don't understand. Well, I mean, I understand it. But, man, that was just... She's, like, smoking. Like, this just half a head that's left over. I can't fault the look. Like, anytime you see these people with, you know, their faces crushed in and heads blown off, it looks pretty damn good. Jason Voorhees would be proud.
I don't know. There's one coming up that doesn't look good at all.
So the Punisher works with Boslunski to, you know, if I'm not back in 5 minutes, then that means I'm dead. So the Punisher goes in. And again, this guy feels like a guy who's tactical. The way he clears rooms, just the way he holds his guns are a lot more convincing than Jane and Lundgren ever were. This is where you can actually see the training kick in. But I also love he puts the RPG through the door, shoots it, and 10 guys just go flying. And if you love heads exploding, this movie is for you, because there's that guy sitting on the toilet that he just shoots for no reason.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about. Doesn't look good at all. No. I enjoy the instinct to do it, but it looks terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, look, you can tell they're kind of running out of money at this point. But this siege, it's basically itchy. This is itchy and scratchy level of cartoonish violence.
100%.
And speaking of Batman Forever, we get the...
Oh, my God.
Well, before that, he fights Jim in the bathroom, which is also kind of like a callback to the 04 one.
Yeah, I found that fun. I like that.
Yeah, but did this dude turn into a spider monkey out of nowhere? did they get a freaking like a wiring harness and decide to use it for a weekend? I don't know. It felt a little weird that he could fight this way, but at the end of it, that it's just kind of like Frank's had enough and is going to beat his ass.
Yeah.
It's a physical fight, which I like. It doesn't feel like it's cartoony, but this one feels like you could feel the hits.
Yeah. And unlike Travolta last week, I think in this one, he has some people who can match up to him. And this is fun. Like, this is the stuff that I actually kind of like, is it's actually embracing its pulpness at this point, and I'm with it at this point.
Well, also, unlike the Thomas Jane one, I get the sense you can actually hurt this guy. He's not invulnerable.
Yeah, there's no witch doctor to put him back together in this one.
No. Although, if there was a voodoo, like the guy from Predator 2, if he showed up in this movie, we would not have been surprised. I mean, he looks like the main meth head.
Yeah, he does.
But he comes up and he goes, "All right, you're going to save your partner or you're going to save the girl?" This is literally the ending of Batman Forever.
It is, and this was actually written by Lexi herself. She's the one who added this. I don't know if she was aware of Batman Forever at this time, but this was an addition by her, and it just feels derivative at this point. I think at this point, you're right, Matt. I think they're running out of money, and I think they're running out of ideas.
It's also The Dark Knight the same year.
Yes.
Hey, are you going to save the people on the boat? Are you going to save, like, oh my gosh.
Are you going to save Harvey Dent, or are you going to save Maggie Gyllenhaal? Yeah, it's the same
thing. Yeah, exactly. But I'm also, at this point, I'm like, you got multiple gangs all kind of fighting each other here in this basically Dread fucking apartment building. And I do think there's a little like, okay, Colin Budiansky goes and gets these group of people that I still do not understand why he got these people that hate him to fight. I do think it's adding that second army, no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's the enemy of the enemy is my friend.
You just had to give Budiansky something to do that shows that he's willing to go off books when necessary.
But I like how this ends. Micro knows he's going to die. And they shoot him point blank. Like, he doesn't save him like you think he would.
Can't believe they did this. And I'm so glad they did. And I'm impressed that they did. Because, of course, he's going to save them both. They always save them both. He says he's going to shoot them. And because we had that scene earlier where he shoots, you know, the person that's dying that, you know, gets asked a question, we know he's not going to do that here. There's going to be a way around it. He doesn't shoot him. But he does give him that comfort, being like, it's not going to hurt. I can't believe they actually did this. Like, it's impressive to me that they went this way.
But he shoots Jim in the head point blank as penance and beats the shit out of Jigsaw, saves them, and then goes back to beating the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a scene that would make Jason Voorhees proud, he impales him on a metal rod and then sets him on fire. Again, much like John Travolta at the end of the last movie. So they get outside. So the line she says, like, my husband and I used to argue about you,
mm-hmm.
which is true. Like, there are plenty of people in Marvel who are like split on the Punisher. It is that hero or vigilante. Like, where do you stand on it? He tells them goodbye. Soap's telling him, you know, you've basically killed everyone in town. Like, go take a vacation. But nope, there's a mugger who's right there. God. This might as well be Gotham City because there are just muggers everywhere. And there's that final shot of the Punisher standing in front of the church that says, Jesus saves.
Oh, my God.
And half of it goes out. You hear the gunshot, and he goes, God damn it, I got brains on my head, on my suit. And that's how the movie ends.
Oh, yeah. And it has saves on the fucking screen. Yeah. So in your face.
Yeah, but it can't be way. Like, that does it for, I mean, unlike the last movie, this one's only 90 minutes.
Yes.
So that does it for Punisher Warzone. Well, we all know where I stand, so I'll save me for last. All right, let's get the negative Nancy out of the way. Garrett, what do you give Punisher Warzone?
90 minutes. God, this felt just as long as last week's film. Coming into this, I was looking forward to revisiting it because, A, I have a lot of respect for Lexi Alexander as a director. I have a lot of respect for her, as I mentioned in the beginning of this. And I'm mostly saying this just so that she doesn't hunt me down, even though I'm not on Twitter anymore, and kick my ass before I say some very negative things. Coming into this, I really thought I was going to see a movie that not only embraced the nihilistic nature of this character, but also played it in a pulpy yet semi-good narrative. What I got instead was a movie that doesn't embrace it. It goes off on tangents, and I still stand by the fact that they give him a redemption storyline where they don't even redeem him. And by the end of this, I was kind of tuned out. This can only be enjoyed by people who love seeing splatter and squibs on the screen. And yeah, a lot of that's nicely staged. A lot of this is very fun. But by the end, I was tuned out. I'm going with a 5 on Punisher Warzone. I think it was about as fun as when I watched Dolph Lundgren's Punisher, but that one still scores 1 point higher because I found there was a lot of potential to do things with this character. And instead, it has a very stupid storyline. It has a very stupid villain. And by the end, I'm not going to say I was bored, but it did feel longer than it actually is. So yeah, 5 out of 10 for Punisher Warzone.
All right, 5 out of 10 for Grinch over here. Adam, bring a little Christmas cheer to this holiday release.
I think this is a holiday release. This, you know what? I didn't like 89. I didn't like 2004. I really wasn't looking forward to this. And I remember when I was getting ready to queue this up, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I could do this so quick after watching Thomas Jane's Punisher. I'm like, I may have to tell the boys we need to change things up a little bit. I don't know if I could do another Punisher film, but it was 90 minutes, 95 minutes. I'm like, I'll find a way to push through. I'll try not to second screen it, but I'll do my best. We'll see. This movie kind of captivates me right off the beginning. And it's, I don't want to say even in a bad way, because by acknowledging what this is and shit, I think Lexi Alexander and Ray Stevenson may understand this character better than any of the movies that came before, because this is the Punisher. This is its full-blown, crazy, vigilante, over-the-top type of film that you kind of need to associate with them if you're going to do it as a movie. I think the TV series has done it variably well. I think there's greatness, and I think there's absolutely horrendousness that would make Dolph Lundgren look good when it comes to John Bernthal's version of the Punisher. But this one here, Punisher Warzone, this is the prototypical Punisher movie. To me, this is fun. This is over the top. It's campy, but still has its seriousness when it comes to it. I think Ray Stevenson is a pretty gosh dang amazing Punisher, and I was not looking forward to him whatsoever. Amazingly, the only thing that the thing I liked least was Jigsaw, probably. You know, I don't think that Dominic West is, I just don't like him and things. I don't know. Something about him bugs me. But the rest of this film, it hits for me. The violence, I enjoy it because it's a slasher type of film. The relationship with his failure, with the family of his failure, I connect with that in a way that I think is meaningful. So I like this a lot. I think from casting to it being willing to be this kind of like late night Cinemax almost feel, delivers. This is by far the most enjoyable that I've watched out of these Punisher films. And I'm standing solid on a 7 on 10. I gave Garrett a lot of shit for Catwoman, and why I may never understand his feeling on that film, I kind of get it a little bit in that I had a fucking enjoyable time watching Punisher Warzone. So solid 7 on 10.
Is this going to be a 10? That's my question.
No, because I lose all credibility. I can't in good conscience give this movie a 10. Okay. As much as I enjoy it, because
thank God
it is made with a certain bar, and it's not trying to be, I don't get a sense of pretentiousness in this whatsoever, which I respect. But I also think this is a great Punisher movie for what I like about the character. I can't speak if it's like the definitive version, because he's not one of my favorites. Of the three movies, though, this is by far the most enjoyable, and I think gets the spirit right from the origin to the performance. And I always appreciate audaciousness and standing out in a genre that has often been accused of being very samey, to not, can't think of a better word. There's a lot of homogenization. I think this stands out, but there is a caveat you have to throw with this movie. You have to be with it. If you're not with it in the first 5 minutes, it's not going to be for you. So you have to take that with a grain of salt, but I do feel like this movie's tailor-made for me, who loves 80s action schlock. This is the sequel to Commando I never knew I needed. Like, it's kind of in that ilk, where it's ridiculous, it's stupid, borderline nonsensical, but it's got an internal logic that I do appreciate, and I like that the Punisher himself is the thing that tethers this movie. On an enjoyment level, it is a 10. But I'm going to land on an 8, because I do have to take into account that it's trying to be its own thing. And there are certain things that I think are like objectively bad that I can't ignore. So it's an 8 on 10 for me, but I think this leaves the other two movies in the dust, and it's not even close.
Well, you might be wrong about that, but that's not a big horse race. You know, those movies they weren't well received by critics. I get some enjoyment out of 89 for the same reasons you enjoyed this one, Matt. But yeah, this was a pretty bad set of weeks, man. I kind of struggled through it, especially these last couple weeks.
So since then, you know, the Punisher has reverted back to Marvel. As I mentioned, Bernthal's played the role for a season of Daredevil and two seasons of his own show. He's come back for Born Again, and he's going to be in the new Spider-Man movie next year. To what capacity, we don't know. But I don't think we're ever going to see a full-blown Punisher movie ever again, just based on the history.
Yeah, you can't get that balance. There's something about the nihilistic nature of the character that you can't put in a pulpy movie like this and expect it to fly. So there is a doldrum there. I didn't really watch the Netflix show because of the way my relationship with that show ended. So I'm not really sure how they handled the character. From what I hear, it's very good. But this is not a character I want to spend a season of TV with. That's my issue, is there's nothing about him I really like and really enjoy. So I cannot see, I mean, I could barely sit through an hour and a half of them, let alone 12 hours of them. So I don't know where else you take this character. If he's going to be in Spider-Man, that's quite the juxtaposition. I'd be interested to see how they handle that.
And I got to say, in Daredevil, I thought they used him really well. The scenes of Bernthal, and like especially the rooftop scene where it's literally him and Daredevil on a rooftop for like 90% of that episode. And it just, it goes from you can't protect a Rick to you can't save them all, Red. I think that's amazing. The series got old really, really quick. I do think he needs to just work his way in and out of the New York heroes, but I don't think he can anchor something himself. I just don't. With all the Defenders coming back now on Disney Plus, we'll see. His inclusion in Daredevil Born Again was really random and added after the fact. It's very clear, but we'll see if he shows up with Jessica Jones coming back and supposedly Luke Cage coming back. We'll see.
I think the problem with the show is the problem that two of the movies had, where I don't like making the Punisher the victim of a conspiracy, which is what they do with the Bernthal version. And I just think the best representation is in Daredevil season two, where he is directly contrasted, and it's all about like how his perspective is different from Daredevil's, and how he'll go to, you know, he'll do the things that Matt Murdock won't allow himself to do
when he's much on like his Billy
own,
Joel.
Yeah, when he's on his own, I just don't feel like he can hold his own weight for two seasons, despite an actor that does a great job with the part. I'm just not crazy about the characterization after that. So putting him in a Spider-Man movie, I like that because it ties to his origin in the comics. I just don't see making him the villain, which I doubt will be the case.
Yeah, I mean, much like Billy Joel, he goes to extremes, and you think the New York heroes would team up to stop him, and maybe that's what happens.
Yeah, like I'm like, we know Ruffalo's in the movie. You're gonna have him fight the Hulk like that. To me, that's the problem with the Punisher, is when you put him with the other like actual superheroes. I'm like, okay, you can have him go against Spider-Man until he realizes he's outmatched. But you're gonna have this guy fight a giant green monster.
Yeah,
and this character does not feel like it would mesh with the other Avengers at all. Like, that's the problem with this character, is there needs to be a balance. And if you put him in with all these superheroes, there's no balance there. This character thrives on his revenge plot and his thoughts of vengeance. You don't put him with these characters. It just won't work.
So we'll put the Punisher on ice for the time being.
Oh, thank Christ.
Unless they announce a new movie out of the blue, in which case we'll blame this series of podcasts, so it'll be our fault. So we do have another Marvel series we'll be getting to soon, but we also have another return to cinemas for a actual slasher franchise.
Oh, yes. We are jumping into a franchise started by me and Matt's buddy, Wes Craven, way back in 1996, because we have a new Scream movie coming out. So me and Matt and Adam are be getting together to discuss Scream. Now, Matt and I have discussed Scream in the past, but that was in the past. Now that we have
Adam, and it will stay in the past.
It's going to stay in the past because those podcasts are gone forever. But I am looking forward to revisiting these. I have not revisited them since me and Matt have done those shows. In fact, I have not watched any of these fucking Scream sequels after 4. So a lot of these will be first-time watches for me, obviously including this new one. I'm looking forward to it. I think there are things to discuss that we didn't discuss then. And with Adam added, I think it adds another dimension to It adds another dimension to a series that really started a whole bunch of things that we're still feeling today. And we're going to discuss those. And of course, I want to watch 5 through, what do we got, 7 coming out?
This is number 7.
This is going to be number 7. Yeah, 5 through 7 will all be first-time watches. So it's going to be a fun series. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really happy that we get to, you know, the amazing director of New Nightmare. We get to
now you really want someone to punish.
Yeah.
God, I love that movie. And I say that unironically.
I know.
I'm looking forward to this, but you know what? I haven't seen a single Scream after two.
Wow.
So the nice thing is I have a child who is really enjoying them, and she has seen more of them than I have. So I think I'm going to try to watch them with my teenager and bring some of that in as well. But I can't wait to discuss this, because I think this is one of those first meta movies that kind of changed the industry.
It did. And look, we've had just as many Scream sequels after the first as we will have had when we did the initial series.
Oh, incredible.
2 through 4, and then we'll have 5 through 7, which we've not talked about. As far as my excitement for number 7, I'm kind of ambivalent, and I'll leave it at that, because today the trailer was released, and I'm not impressed.
Oh, is there a trailer out?
There is a trailer, so you will watch it after we go off the air, but that'll be next, building up to number 7, which comes out in February, so we're getting there. Boys, I had a lot of fun with these reviews, despite the quality of these films.
Yeah, I want to reiterate that I was not expecting this to turn into a borderline Last Jedi podcast by the end. But despite that, I also had fun at least discussing these movies with you, gentlemen. And my God, I mean, I'm glad that I revisited that 2004 one just to realize how bad this Marvel retrospective can get. But my revisit to Marvel, while it wasn't fun while watching the films, was definitely fun in discussing them with you two.
Sounds great. So until next time, when we talk about Ghostface and Scream, sometimes I'd like to get my hands on a podcast. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're leaving.
I have work to do. Read your newspaper every day, you understand.
Which section?
Obituaries.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Ranking his ass, huh? He's fine. He's all right.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Let me help you.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Don't let your memories kill you.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You have the right to shut the fuck up!
Please visit and check out our Percolated Media Facebook page to get an advance look at what the boys will be reviewing that week, as well as other things such as Matt and Garrett's wrestling podcast, what the site has in store for the future, some periodically done written reviews, and so much more.
Take that message to your people.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, Indiana Jones, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Predator films, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Incredibles films, Avatar, and so much more.
You want to come along? Leave your badge at home.
Give me a hand, fellas.
Yeah.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
He hasn't slept all week.
How do you know?
Because I haven't slept all week.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I'm in charge of the body count.
Scheduling done by Matt.
Okay, enough of the jokes. Let's break out the champagne.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Why do you do this?
Somebody has to punish the corrupt.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
No more distractions. We need to focus on my goals.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
I still talk to God sometimes. I ask him if what I'm doing is right or wrong. I'm still waiting for an answer. And until I get one, I'll be out here, waiting, watching. The guilty will be punished.
Get out.
We open with the Marvel Knights logo, which is actually different from the standard Marvel one. I really wish they kept this, but when your other movie is Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, I can see why you don't want to have anything to do with associating.
Yeah.
Does that use the logo too?
Yeah. It's the only other time. Yeah.
And that movie's PG-13.
No, I thought that was a hard R.
No, it's PG-13.
Is it?
We'll look it up after, but I'm 99% positive.
Okay.
And